From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. From Sacramento to Nevada County, residents are expressing safety concerns following attacks involving the LGBTQ plus community. Last night, the Sacramento LGBT Center held a forum on safety for Lavender Heights in response to what they describe as recent hate-motivated attacks in the area, including a man who was left comatose following an attack this fall in the heart of the district. Community members expressed their concerns last night, discussed resources, and held a conversation with Councilmember Phil Pluckybaum, the Midtown Association, and the Sacramento Police Department's LGBTQ plus liaison. Over in the foothills, some residents in Nevada County are expressing concern as well over a string of attacks that have shaken their community, involving recent graduates and current students within Nevada Joint Union's high school district. Joining us today is Sacramento LGBT Center CEO David Heisterman and Crystal Myers, an organizer and mother of a victim in one of the attacks in Nevada County. And also joining us is Josh, a student who attends Gidoti High School in Nevada County. He declined to give his full name due to fears of harassment. First, we're going to be speaking with David at the LGBT Center here in Sacramento. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Vicky.
So you held this forum last night. What led to the forum that you held at the Sacramento LGBT Center?
Yeah, so in addition to the hate crime that you mentioned, one of our community members was viciously attacked at the first part of November. There have been other incidents in the community that we've heard about since then, the things that don't necessarily get reported to police. And so folks are feeling very unsafe in the Lavender Heights area. And there's certainly a national fear of what's going on in the country right now. And so that led us to convene folks together to have this conversation in the community.
And help us visualize the Lavender Heights district, you know, for people who haven't been to this part of Sacramento. I mean, your center is really an anchor in the Lavender Heights district.
It is. We are right in the heart of this historic LGBTQ district called Lavender Heights. It's a vibrant nightlife. It has arts and cultural activities, restaurants. It's really the heart of Midtown, right in the center of that area. And it's a place where folks have historically felt very safe to be out as LGBTQ people. A lot of LGBTQ businesses are located there. And so that's really the place that a lot of folks have called home or come to for a place of comfort and safety.
What can you tell us about the incident of that man, that gentleman who was left comatose following an attack outside the center in the Lavender Heights district? It was this fall.
It was this fall, so it was on Halloween, actually, and so I can't tell you all the details of it. I'm not privy to all of the things in the investigation, but a man in our community was walking with his daughter and some friends after their activities in the evening, celebrating, and someone came up to them and made some comments, and it was a confrontation, and the perpetrator hit him, and he fell, and his head had a severe injury on the sidewalk.
I would imagine that was a big topic of last night's safety forum.
It certainly was the impetus of folks feeling very fearful that an attack like that could happen to them.
Since you've had the night to sleep on it, how did the forum go? What was the turnout like?
It was a packed house. It's probably more people than we've had for any forum at the center so far. And it was very emotional. People had the opportunity to really express how they're feeling, how this attack made them feel, their other instances and things that they have experienced. And whether that shows up in the statistics or not, it doesn't stop the way that people feel when people say things or do things. Also, there was a lot of discussion about how welcome they feel in a neighborhood that they feel ownership over as a historically LGBTQ neighborhood, and what the impact of more people coming in and sort of the change in culture to the neighborhood overall that's made them feel less safe and less welcome.
You know, this also comes as, you know, the FBI releases its annual crime report. This was back in the summer. And the Human Rights Campaign had disclosed that hate crimes against the LGBTQ plus community remain among the top three most reported categories. And this is nationally. How has this year has this year been different in terms of, since you're so tapped into the community, about, have there been changes this year compared to years prior?
Thanks for that question, because the statistics that are reported through crime, whether it be through the FBI or the Attorney General's office collects that from police departments across California, the numbers are still pretty low, even though they are increasing. But that what I mentioned earlier is that there are so many of these incidents that are not reported. So we did a survey earlier this year that started in February through June of over 2,000 community members here in our region, and 63% of those folks said that they felt less comfortable being out in public spaces, in schools, in at work, etc. And 70%, more than 70% actually, said that they had had noticeable increases in bias in their own lives and in everyday experience.
Hmm. I mean, at the forum last night, I mean, there were key stakeholders. Councilmember Phil Pluckybaum was there. Lavender Heights is in his district. The Midtown Association was there as well. They represent businesses in Midtown. There was also the Sacramento Police LGBTQ liaison. Tell us more about this role.
Sure. The LGBT liaison is one of the things that back in 2019, when there was a conflict over police at Pride, we really put pressure on the police department to invest more in their engagement with the community. One of the things is the LGBT liaison, when it's improving data collection, a community advisory board, to try to really do more to help engage with the community and be supportive of the community. Because the reality is back all the way to Stonewall, we're talking about police raids and police abuse of LGBTQ people and attacks on LGBTQ people. So now they have the responsibility, and we're asking them to be supportive when an attack occurs. So one of the things that was expressed last night is that the community members still don't feel like anything is going to be done if they report these things. And some folks gave experiences of where they felt like the right thing wasn't done, or that there was nothing done in response. So there's still quite a bit of work to do there. I do think that it's a step of progress that there is an LGBTQ liaison here in Sacramento, that person is approaching the work with a lot of humility. We have a policy at the center that armed, uniformed law enforcement officials are not allowed in our facilities. A lot of folks don't feel safe around law enforcement. So he came out in his plain clothes to the forum and was very open to listening and finding ways that they can improve.
If someone has an instance that they want to report, can they report it directly to the liaison if they feel uncomfortable, you know, reporting it, like calling 911 and just talking to any officer?
Yes, absolutely. They can report it directly to the liaison. The fastest way to get a response is certainly to call the department, and it will get routed through a special like process they have for hate and bias related instances that's separate from regular crime reports. And so they can reach out to them. That information is on the city's police department website. There's an LGBTQ page that folks can search for. If folks aren't comfortable with law enforcement, or they want to make sure that this is reported, they can come to the center's website at saccenter.org. And there's a hate and bias incident reporting form on our website. And what will happen if someone reports it there is that we'll reach out to the person. You can also report it anonymously if you just want to make sure that this is being tracked somewhere. And be aware of it happening in the region. We'll track it that way. But we'll reach out to the person, and we take a very like client, community member, victim centered approach. So what is it that you want us to do with this information? Do you want our advocacy to help you report it to law enforcement? Do you want some other assistance? Do you need mental health help as a result of this incident? What are the different ways that we can help support you? Because not everyone wants to be public about what happened to them, and that's perfectly okay, too.
So they're in the driver's seat.
They absolutely are in the driver's seat about what services and needs that they might have, and also whether or not they want this reported to law enforcement, if it's going to be investigated, or if they want to go and talk to the media about it. So it's great that we're having some folks today to talk about this in a really personal way, and I'm sure they can speak to you about the risks that come with that. There's going to be negative attention that comes to you about speaking out about these things happening.
How has been the relationship and conversations with the other stakeholders at yesterday's forum? I mean, you have Councilmember Phil Pluckybaum, who represents Lavender Heights and the Midtown Association. And I believe it was reported other council members were in attendance as well.
Yeah, Councilmember Dickinson was also there. We had someone from the district attorney's office that came as a guest as well. So there were some other stakeholders, also businesses in the neighborhood, one of the faith communities. So that was all really good to have some engagement from folks and really hear folks out. I think that there is universal understanding and feeling that we want everyone in this neighborhood and across the city and the region to feel safe and welcome in their communities. And each of us up on the panel kind of had a different piece of that, right? So we're a convener of folks. We can bring resources together, the businesses, the community members, activists. to have this conversation, talk about what solutions might look like to make it so that people feel safer in the community. The police department, they're responsible for responding to these incidents when things happen. The city and the Midtown Association have a post about creating environments that feel safer. So things like adding lighting, security patrols, all that sort of thing are things that the components that they can do. So we all kind of had different components of what we can do together collectively to make this space more welcoming and safe, and then also be super responsive when some of these things happen. So folks also know that this kind of behavior and these attitudes are not welcome in our city.
Did any solutions come out of last night's forum? Anything tangible that will lead to next steps?
One of the questions that some folks in the audience ask is, what can we do tomorrow, right? And so folks want an immediate response. Long-term things like adding lighting or changing the way law enforcement works or things like that, they take longer and they take money. And so resources are scarce in the city right now, even though we have plans and want to do those things. But things that people could do right now were just like increasing awareness about the LGBTQ liaison, being able to connect with them directly. So there was a commitment from council members to help put together flyers to be able to advertise in the neighborhood. We committed at the center to continue these conversations and to continue to bring people together. The department committed to being more active in helping folks understand how the process works and if there's an incident to be more responsive in a very quick manner.
David Heitzduman is the CEO of the Sacramento LGBT Center. And if you're listening to Inside and just tuning in right now, we're learning more about concerns over attacks involving the LGBTQ community. We're going to move to the foothills now and bring in Crystal. Crystal, you recently organized a peaceful community protest in Nevada City last week. What sparked this demonstration?
Thank you, Vicky. You know, honestly, I couldn't have seen it coming. What sparked it was December 1st. I released videos of my daughter and her friend being brutally attacked. This incident happened on August 29th of this year. And by the 1st of December, I was under the impression that only one out of 11 attackers was being prosecuted. So I revealed these videos, and unfortunately, it fortunately raised a lot of awareness in our community. It's reached about 100,000 views, but I didn't know what was going to be ignited after releasing that. The very next day, a couple of girlfriends reached out to me. They said, we need to get up to the county and demand answers. So we held a rally, stood up front, tried to raise awareness. The mayor showed up and invited us to the school board meeting the next night, and that's where things really evolved. I showed up that next night pretty hesitant, not something that I typically show up to. I don't get involved in local politics, but we came that night because we were invited, and it was pretty packed. Apparently, they usually only have 8 to 10 people in the audience, and there was a full room with people standing. I spoke about my daughter's assault to the school board, specifically because her assailant was a minor, and I felt like they were not interested in knowing what this minor had done. Right after me, Josh, who's here with me now, spoke out, and I had no idea that the kids had worked so hard to make the board aware, make the adults in the community aware the year before in the spring. They are scared. They are not being heard. And I had no idea. I thought it was an isolated incident outside of school. I did know about other attacks, group attacks. I didn't know that these kids were hurting each other at school and no one's listening.
And our student assistant, Ruth Finch, has been working on this and helped prepare this segment with myself. She did get statements from the Nevada County District Attorney's Office, the Sheriff's Office as well. They acknowledge, you know, the reports that they've received, that the community has expressed deeply concerning violent assaults, and this is part of their statement. The DA's office has said that they can confirm that felony charges have already been filed against certain individuals. There are active investigations underway as well. I guess, what is your response to the response that you received from people in positions of power, elected officials and public officials?
Unfortunately, I feel like a lot of the meetings that we've had feel defensive, at times a little combative when really at this point, we just need to acknowledge the issue and then bridge how we figure out how to move forward. You know, I mean, acknowledgement is number one. This is an issue. And, you know, like David was speaking to, I think the common denominator here with all of our community members is that silence equals safety. And I wasn't going to be silent. And I'm hoping that that encourages other people that have gone through what my daughter went through or what other students are going through to feel empowered to come forward. But right now, how things are set up, and again, like David was talking about, there needs to be some sort of liaison. And that's kind of what I was trying to think about over these last couple weeks is, you know, the process of filing a report with the sheriff's department and the time that it takes to get to the DA's office and have charges filed is a very quiet time. It can be really isolating for a victim to not know what's happening, to not have communication. It's unnerving. And it does, I think, prevent people from moving forward and reporting when something's happened because they don't think anything is happening. And unfortunately, in our case, I was asked to be quiet. I asked if I could contact parents that I knew in this video. I was told to keep it, you know, under wraps, not post videos, not do anything, and just let them do their job. So I tried. And the Halloween attack, there was 20 kids on two. And it was really disturbing to hear about after meeting with the mom and the son to realize that three of the overlapping names from my daughter's assault were a part of that assault. And then, you know, 4 days after I released the videos of my daughter's assault, there was another one racially motivated at Target, and they were apprehended. There were two adults and one minor. I can't say if the minor was in my daughter's videos, but I can tell you the two that got the felony charges that the DA is talking about are getting felony charges because of that incident, not because of my daughter's. And they've had video footage since August. I don't know why they weren't apprehended then.
Yeah, Josh, I want to bring you in. Crystal mentioned that you spoke at that meeting. What prompted you to want to step up and speak out?
Yeah, I have been speaking at school board meetings for a while now, rather reluctantly. I think they're very boring and not a whole lot gets done at them. The reason that I have been involved in, I would guess, student politics is last April, a resolution was proposed to the board that was entirely symbolic to essentially say that they support marginalized students and they accept that students in the schools do not feel safe. And that resolution was voted down 3-2 on the grounds that it would be a bad financial decision to do so and could supposedly lead to federal funding being cut, which makes up about 3.5% of the school's budget, which is less than they have in extra reserves of just cash that is sitting there. And myself and many other students, I went to the board meeting when they voted on that. I thought this will be a surefire. They're going to vote for this. I actually went to say you should be doing more than just a symbolic resolution. And everyone in public comment said, go for this. And they voted no on it. And I was outraged by it. I talked to my classmates about it. They were outraged by it and said, how could, like, our school board, the people who are supposed to represent us, refuse to even acknowledge that students don't feel safe? And refused to even say that there might be a problem. And so then the week after that was spring break, and the first day back we had a school walkout of probably 400 kids across two different schools, which the probably like 40% of the student population between those two schools. We walked out, we said, like, the bare minimum, we want you to pass this resolution and say that you will support us. In response, the board president, Andrew Klein, made a statement saying that we need to get our butts back in class and that we are protesting democracy by doing that. And that caused a lot more outrage. And then a couple weeks later, came to find he gave a speech at a Republican Party fundraiser where he said a couple completely abhorrent things about being at war with the students and with the woke mind virus that is infecting our schools, and proclaiming that he wants to eradicate diversity within our schools. And that has really caused a lot of outrage. And for students, it feels like this is the person who is the president of our board who is supposed to represent us, and they are actively saying that they are at war with the students. And that feels like, how can they possibly be doing this? They don't even acknowledge that students might be feeling unsafe. And so just in the last day, I talked to probably 25 students over four schools about, like, what complaints do you have? like, do you feel safe? And I got probably 5 pages of notes of different things that people have complained about. But overall, the general theme is that they feel like they aren't listened to, that nobody in the district or in any parts of administration are actually working with them, and they feel more like they are combative than actually someone that they can work with to help. And so, like, there's violence in our schools. I would say there's never a week where I don't hear about a fight that happens somewhere, and nothing really gets done about that. One thing people complained a lot about is there is constantly racist and homophobic graffiti written in bathrooms, and then they will close the bathrooms to do that and won't provide an alternative. So their solution is to just close the bathrooms, and then you can't go to the bathroom. But if you can go to the bathroom, it's filled with racist and homophobic and whatnot.
I'm curious, because we were just speaking with David at the Sacramento LGBT Center. I mean, you were at a school district in Nevada County. Is there a space like the Sacramento LGBT Center in Nevada County?
As far as I know, there are no dedicated, like, queer youth places. There are places that will provide occasional spaces for youth, but there is no place that is just constantly there that you can go to.
You know, David, as someone who, I mean, you get a lot of feedback, and you learn what's happening in the community, whether it's a school or whether it's a business or whether it's just someone living in Sacramento. How instrumental is the role that you play? I mean, when listening to Josh and what he's explaining his experiences in high school in Nevada County, I would think that that's not necessarily like just only happening in Nevada County. You must talk to students as well across Sacramento and surrounding counties?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not an isolated situation in Nevada County by any means. There are lots of climate surveys of students across California and across America, and it's very clear that LGBTQ folks, other minority groups, community members of color do not feel safe in schools. And I think there's a basic fundamental right that every school board has and every school district has to provide a safe learning environment. I'm pretty sure there's a law somewhere that says that that's a requirement. So how is it that those districts are going to support that? And the idea that students are bringing these problems to them directly and they're being denied access to basic things like bathrooms is not okay. Mm-hmm.
Finally, you know, for people listening, Josh, what do you hope they take away from this conversation?
I think the biggest thing that, like, this is something that I believe very fundamentally in is that it seems like the things that are affecting students are being decided not by students. And, like, our school board, it's made up of 5 people. Students are not allowed to vote on them. Students are not allowed to be on the board. The only representative we have on the board that we do get a vote for doesn't have voting power. And so I think the most important thing that listeners can do is talk to students, of go and talk to the people in the schools, that we all have ideas of what we think is best to happen in the schools. But ultimately, the people who should be deciding that are the ones who are living it. The people in the schools who are experiencing things should be the ones that we listen to.
Crystal, I want to end with you. How's your daughter doing?
She's doing all right. We spent this morning out with sheriffs, finally taking down her information and rewatching the videos, which was really hard for her to do. But she did it, and hopefully we have something that comes from that. I do just really quickly want to touch on what Josh just said. It does need to be made up of students, and I'm not a lawyer, I don't know, but I think legislation needs to be written up for all of California where they can change it so that the school board is made up of half students, half, you know, adults in the community. Maybe half those adults are people that are involved in the school, and maybe some of those are parents. That way you're going to get a voice from everywhere. But it definitely, obviously, right now, California's law states that it has to be adults that are board members. I think that something needs to change there. And it will take a little while. It's not going to be overnight. Something that school boards are able to do right away is they can start a safety council. And it sounds like that's what the kids tried to do. And it was shut down. So I'm hoping to go back and speak to the board sometime this week and look at how they can focus their energy on creating a safe space for these kids and doing what's right and making sure that they use their power as a board to do that.
Well, thank you all for taking the time
and
joining us.
Yeah. Thank you, Vicky.
Crystal Myers is an organizer and mother of a victim in an attack that happened in Nevada County. Josh is a student who attends Gidoti High School in Nevada County, and he's going by his first name for this segment. David Heisteman is the CEO of the Sacramento LGBT Center, and we've been learning more about concerns over attacks involving the LGBTQ plus community here in Sacramento, as well as in the foothills. Up next, given the recent weather, planning summer activities might not be top of mind, but applications are open for a unique summer camp that gives young women hands-on experience with firefighting. We'll learn about Camp Cinder. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.